Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and we're bringing you our feature in-depth interview followed by some new music from Ukraine. In this week's interview, our Bohdan Mihailo talks to Thomas Sillison on his experiences and adventures in investing in Ukraine, working with IT to develop green energy and building wind turbines. Well, that will be a little further on. But first of all, this week's news. Russia has agreed for France and Germany to monitor shipping traffic in the Kerch Strait. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that German Chancellor Angela Merkel had asked President Putin for permission to send German specialists to the Strait over a month ago and also had requested French observers to join the mission. This can be done today, tomorrow, at any time, Lavrov had stated. Meanwhile, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said that it is widely acknowledged that ships can pass through the Kerch Strait, a body of water which is shared between Russia and Ukraine. Earlier, Ukraine had imposed martial law in November, citing the threat of a full-scale invasion after Russia had captured three of its vessels in the Kerch Strait. In February, European Union foreign ministers will discuss imposing more sanctions against Russia over its standoff with Ukraine in the Azov Sea. The bloc will also deliver a demarche to Moscow as early as next week over Russia's continued detention of 24 Ukrainian soldiers captured during the incident in November. EU members that have long taken a hard line on Russia, countries such as Lithuania, Sweden, Britain and Poland, have now been supported in proposing more sanctions by Denmark and Slovakia. They argued that pressure from France and Germany on Moscow to free the servicemen has so far not borne results. On Tuesday, former Ukrainian Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko officially launched her bid for the presidency, with polls showing her as the frontrunner for the post. She made this announcement at a session of her party Batyushchina. The 58-year-old, who is a highly divisive figure in Ukrainian politics, has been active on the Ukrainian political scene for the past two decades, coming to international prominence through her role in the 2004 Orange Revolution. IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde said she had urged Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko to proceed with reforms more quickly, while reiterating that the International Monetary Fund was ready to continue supporting Ukraine. She stated that she had highlighted the urgency for Ukraine to accelerate reforms and transition to stronger growth, which is needed to improve people's living standards in a sustainable manner. A Ukrainian court this week found ex-president Viktor Yanukovych guilty of high treason and sentenced him in absentia to 13 years in prison for asking Russia's Vladimir Putin to send troops to Ukraine. In 2014, Yanukovych was ousted as a result of an uprising after his attempts to stop it had failed. He then fled the country and asked Putin to send troops to Ukraine to help restore control. Judge Vladislav Livyatko in Kyiv's Oblon District Court stated that Yanukovych committed a crime against the foundation of Ukraine's national security. Horizon Capital, a U.S. private equity firm investing in high-growth and export-driven companies in Ukraine and the region, has closed its third fund, the Emerging Europe Growth Fund, at $200 million hard cap, surpassing its $150 million target. As the Horizon Capital's Emerging Europe Growth Fund received strong backing from existing and new investors, and it's the largest private equity fund raised for Ukraine in a decade.
I'm very happy to have as my guest on this week's program a Danish representative of a Danish company very active in Ukraine. And this is Thomas Sillison, who's chairman of the BIR Group, which stands for Boyer Innovative Engineering Advisors. He's going to tell us a little bit about what they actually do here, but I would like us to use this opportunity, Thomas, to talk more broadly about the challenges of getting alternative ecological types of, energy for Ukraine. So welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bogdan. It's a pleasure being here. I'm happy to be invited. Just to give your listeners a brief introduction to our company, we started 10 years ago in Denmark. We are mostly focusing on renewable energy, where we have in Denmark about 150 engineers working on wind turbine designs. We are like a specialist company where people come to seek help when they design wind turbines. So our customer database is basically the largest wind turbine companies in the world. The two largest are our main customers, or the three largest, actually.
And when did you get involved in Ukraine?
It's about 5 years ago. And actually, it was like a side project because our group consists of many companies. We also have a plastic tool manufacturing factories in Denmark and Malaysia. We have companies for renovating oil rigs, you know, so we have a broad spectrum of businesses. But we had a guy coming to us, approaching us, asking us to do software development. And we realized from a friendship I have with a Danish IT entrepreneur that we most likely should use Ukrainians.
So you initially were involved on the IT side. That
yes.
was the opening you used.
Exactly. And
and that's an area that's really booming in Ukraine.
For sure, it is. And the funny thing was that being an economist, I checked the cost of what you say wages in Ukraine and compared to the offers I got from the IT companies in Ukraine. And I was like, there was a mismatch because the official statistics is much lower than the offers I got. I realized later IT is actually a relatively high priced product in Ukraine. Not knowing that, I decided to find somebody myself in the country to help us. And I knew some Russians who knew a girl in Lugansk. So we ended in Lugansk. And I took over there with a friend of mine, and my knowledge of Ukraine was zero. I had never been in Ukraine before. I had not really cared about the country. So I came to Lugansk, or Luhansk, as you would say nowadays. And
what were your first impressions?
It was fantastic. I loved the city. I think the people were so kind, they were so nice. It was, of course, very different from Denmark. But in reality, even though the Marushka, what you call these buses, looked like shit, they functioned and I could drive in them. So I was like, yeah, okay, it works. And this girl found us two guys, and one of them still works for us now. So it was, you know, that was fantastic. So having that, I come home to my two partners in beer, and I said to them, guys, we should, you know, actually also use Ukrainian engineers. And they are, like me, pretty dynamic, so they just said yes. So
Were you approached from within Ukraine about ecological energy opportunities, or is it something that you, through exploration, that you offered yourselves?
It's some, we can say, well, when we then started engineering in Ukraine, it was just because we often in Denmark lost orders to Indian companies who could offer their services cheaper than Danish that we could. And we wanted to have an engineering base in Ukraine that could make us competitive with Indian companies. Crazy thing is, last week I was in Las Vegas talking to a potential customer, and there we are talking about outcompeting Chinese engineers. So actually, you know, this, we have an edge here. But first of all, we started up in Lugansk. It was pretty simple, and then came the war. We had to move. We moved to Odessa because I thought the war would be over in 2 months. I'm always optimistic, and I was thinking my staff should be a nice place in the summer of 2014. As we all know, it took longer, and we just continued to grow in Odessa, and we're still there. We are happy to be there.
And this is, you're talking, this is the IT component or the engineering component, or both?
That's engineering. I mean, we have now about 140 engineers doing, you know, mechanical designs for wind turbines, and we have on other customers, and we have about 20 who is software and electricity, doing you know, more IT related
and
stuff.
And where are the main locations where the wind turbines are employed? Where are growth areas?
I mean, we are a strategic partner for Vestas in Denmark, so they use us extensively for design of wind turbines, and you can say we are in the basic design of the wind turbine. So before it actually is a product, we are involved. We will do the design of the nacelle, which is the house you see on the top of it. We will help with propellers. We would help with...
But what are the main areas of Ukraine? Is it the south, the east of Ukraine? Where are they being employed?
Once the wind turbines is designed, companies like Vestas, Siemens, whoever we work for, will get orders. And orders are normally based on analysis of areas where you have a good wind load so that you can have a profitable wind turbine there. So it could be in the south, it could be in the sea, it could actually also be somewhere
so
else.
So areas that are open, basically,
yes.
the what we used to call the steppes, yeah?
Exactly. You need to have areas where you don't have a lot of turbulence because that will make the production less profitable. So you can say Ukraine is open for renewable in this, there's no doubt about it. Like you also...
Can you give me an idea and our listeners of the scale of the development, you know, from 0 to 100 of such things, or 200? Is it an area that's growing quickly? I mean, we see that the EU is involved in this now with grants, that it seems to be a very topical issue.
It is a huge industry, and it's probably the largest industry in Denmark, because Siemens and Vestas are both having their headquarters in Denmark. Denmark as a country is now in such a situation that sometimes during each year there will be days where all electricity is supplied by wind turbines. So in reality, it's now a huge thing in our country.
For the listener, this is what, like a giant windmill?
It's for instance, we are very much involved in the design of the Vestas V164, which is the world's largest wind turbine. It's a 8 megawatt wind turbine, so just a huge one. It is so huge that if you lay it flat and you have the propellers circulating like on flat on the earth, it would cover the whole of Wembley Arena. So, you know,
that is huge.
It is just huge wind turbines, yes. And therefore, it's a huge engineering task where you have many thousand guys working on it. So it's very impressive.
And who is paying for the installation of these turbines? Is it Ukrainians themselves, the government? Is it private? Businesses?
It's you know, normally countries, including Ukraine, have some kind of incentive to put out these things. You can say they are not as cost effective as having a nuclear power plant, for instance. But on the other hand, you have the the feeling of it's green, it's renewable, and you also have the strategic point of it that you cannot throw nuclear power plants all over the place. But you can.
And we have, you know, the horrible memory of Chernobyl here,
yes,
which doesn't go very well with nuclear power plants, ones.
It's also a memory for us Danes, because I was a young kid when it happened and I still remember it. So it was a huge thing in Denmark too.
So here we've got the challenge not only of the obsolete and maybe still in some respects potentially dangerous for the long-term nuclear power plants, but we've got the old industries, coal, reliance on oil, the traditional, the carbon, what do we call them, energy. You're providing the real alternative to it, which we see also where in France, Germany, other countries are relying increasingly on this.
You see it many places in Europe. Also Spain, Portugal, England, and so on has a lot. It's just a matter of countries realizing that relying on one source is not very healthy. You know, you have the situation with the gas supplies from Russia. So in order to be strategic independent, it's nice to have a broad mix of supplies.
So there's also this, apart from the economic and political element, there a safety net, a safeguard, if you want, in times of political complications. But tell me, in terms of the ratio, the proportion of the Ukrainian content in the business that you do, I have no idea. Is it 5%, 2%, 10%?
It's around zero. You can say it like this. Our office in Odessa only supply our Danish office with help at the moment. Veronica, who I'm with this week, which is our manager in Kiev, we are setting up a sales office because we want to also target Ukrainian businesses, because we have a lot of know-how we can kind of transfer to Ukraine. We would be happy to have customers. I think that you can say our core business is helping really big companies, but we would also be happy to help small. So it's just a matter of Ukraine also have to have the maturity. You can say now you have the maturity to set up the wind turbines.
Is the political will there? Is the interest there?
The political will is super simple. It's just a matter of getting this money, you know, incentive to you know, you get some kickback per kilowatt you produce of your wind turbine, and your country is supplying that. So that is step one.
But I've suggested that Ukraine seems to be getting grants, if you want, in simplified terminology, from the EU and others to invest in this alternative sources of energy.
I think we all from a European perspective have an interest in Ukraine becoming, you know, truly independent without having to rely or be object to force from other countries in regards to energy supply. So it's a strategic important thing for your country to stand alone. So I think IMF, EU will support that very strongly. Our government in Denmark do the same. then Denmark has energy advisors helping your energy ministry at, while we speak, sitting here in Kiev. I know them very well. So it's.
And have you seen progress being made in the last 5 years?
I think your country has changed a lot, yes. But I think it's, you know how it is in life, that if you're in the middle of something, it's difficult to see. But when, like me, I come back and forth all the time, I see changes all the time. I think your country is growing economically and also in quality of buildings and so on. But I would say, though, that your country could definitely do more. It's like we had a what we call the energy crisis in Denmark, which was back in the 70s when the oil-producing countries decided to raise the prices dramatically. And I was at that time living, of course, with my mom and dad because I was a young guy. And my father, was the house we had was with one layer glass, which is actually often still in Ukraine. But what happens was my father would put plastic on front of all windows to isolate better. And it started a trend in Denmark, which has gone on to this day, on how to be, you know, energy competitive, or what you say, improving. And our country is relying a lot on it, because until we got the found the oil in the North Sea and then started making wind turbines, we had to buy everything from outside. So reducing cost by being efficient was very, very important. And you see Danish houses today, many of them will be built in a quality that basically you don't need to heat them. They are so well isolated that it's not needed. They will just keep the same temperature all day, all the country, all year.
I just would like to remind listeners that I'm talking to Thomas Sillesen, who's the chairman of the BIR Beer Group from Denmark, a leading or cutting-edge Danish engineering consulting company, increasingly active here in Ukraine. My question now would be more about the way you operate. I've been doing a little bit of homework, and I'm quite impressed about the quality of the staff, the lengths that you go to ensure that they are of the right standard, they have the right training, and they're team players, yes? But one other thing that I note is that and you pride yourselves on being creative, that you're up for any challenges.
Mm. Thank you. But yeah,
how do you sustain this? How do you guarantee this? This is through a close kind of personal connections between staff, you know, the mutual trust and support. Or how do you cultivate this ethos?
As you know, Danish business culture is very different from Ukrainian. If you come to our Odessa office, the lady we have here there, which is an outstandingly good director, has made it so it functions, you know, very precisely, very timing and so on. If you come to our Danish office, you will feel like it's anarchy. You will go in through the front door, there'll be nobody there. You will look for a cup of coffee, you can't find the coffee machine. You'll go up two stairs before you find somebody working there, and they will be not having time to talk with you because they are so focused on the task. Our culture in this respect is so different. Does it work? It definitely...
But why is this? Because of the degree of autonomy and trust that exists?
You know, when we started our company in Ukraine, we had this challenge that our initial plan was I should be director and this girl, Dinara, should be kind of manager of the office. But we realized I could not get a work permit before the company was made, so we had to make her director. And then making my work permit took long time. So we were in a situation we had to send about 2 million grinyas to open the office. And I talked with Jonas Boyer, my partner, and I said, Jonas, you know, Dinara needs 2 million guineas. And he says, yeah, I'll send it to her. She looks trustworthy. So we send it to this girl we have met two times in our life. We send her 2 million guineas into a bank account, which she has full control over. And I think not a lot of Ukrainians would do that. But that is typical Danes. We believe in people until proven wrong.
And but you have had some legal challenges here and some problems, and I hear that you have been successful in getting justice done without resorting to the usual way that people tend to do this, you know, bribes and backhanders and whatnot, in a system that's far from perfect. Legal.
It is far from perfect, but actually I can tell you just 2 weeks ago we won a court case over the pension fund again. They have now to pay us 1 million guineas, but they didn't follow the law.
How long did that take to get that victory?
It's the fourth time we take them to court. So we have won the three previous and now we won this as well. It's just
is this in Odessa?
It was in Odessa, yes. We expect them to appeal. They have done before, but once we win the appeal, they normally stop. So we're pretty confident. We're not even, as you know, this is first time you hear it, so not even something we go to the press with. You can say Denmark is the most non-corrupt country in the world, in general. And you can tell it means that we are so used to it that we cannot
imagine. Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance, you know. The stories, I mean, I can give you many, but we have had what we call a huge scandal called the Atea scandal. And in reality, it was only about some guys getting a cheap laptop, getting a nice dinner in a restaurant, and one of them got a trip to Dubai. But it was headline news on all the TV, on all the newspapers for months, you know. And I can imagine that if you had a scandal of that level in Ukraine, nobody would notice, you know.
No. But so there's a lot for you to teach us and for you to convey to us. What have you learned from Ukraine working in this environment, which has the opportunities but has its challenges and difficulties? Are there any lessons you've taken from Ukraine?
I would say like this: I love Ukraine. I think that's answer enough. But going deeper, I would say it's like one of the things I notice is the social understanding you have of each other, the care you have for each other. It impresses me to a level that I nearly have wet eyes now saying it to you. This is outstanding. When I see we have an ill staff member, what the others in the office will do to help him, how much they will donate to him of their salaries, it's like, you know, fantastic. I love that part of it. It's so good. And there is areas where you can teach us a lot. On the other hand, you know, the principles of justice, the principle of fairness, you all know them. You've been taught by your mom and dad when you were kids. But growing up, you realize your society is not like that. And of course, society should be like that. And there, we Danes are a little bit stupid because we're only 5 million out of all these people in the world. But we think we are right in this point. So we will just upheld this to the end. And when we won our big case in Odessa against the raiders attack, I phoned Jonas and I said, Jonas, we won.
What was this raiders attack? Can you tell us?
It was some guy had not paid the mortgage for 10 years and the building has been taken away from him. It was sold to us. And then on the night it was kind of public that we had taken the ownership, he calls it up and said he was a victim of fraud by the bank that has stolen the building from him. And it was so pathetic and so crazy that I was like, this cannot be true. So I took it up with Poroshenko on April 17 in Copenhagen when he was there. But I was confident we would win because it was so absurd. But then in August 17, we lost the building in the first court. And I was like shocked because I could not imagine. And then I had to, you know, pull myself together and start fighting this fight. And we fought it and we won in the appeal court in Odessa, which was...
I suppose the present mayor, Trukhanov, who is a very controversial figure, was involved.
I don't know. I think there's a few guys who cleaned the streets in Odessa who was not involved. But anyway...
No, but that's a very important victory because, you know, Odessa with this mayor and has been exposed quite a few times by the Kyiv Post and others, and then the whole story of Saakashvili being in the area and that attempt to reform. And you seem to have been in a difficult place, but to have made it work for you. Look, time is running out. Tell us a little bit more about your view, your assessment of the investment environment. Has it improved or is it still difficult? Do companies like yours have the confidence to invest in Ukraine?
I mean, we were naive when we came here because we came with this Danish perspective. So we had not ever heard about raiders attack and things like that when we came. Now we experience it, but we also know how to win. I would say Ukraine is a fantastic opportunity for investment. But as I have raised with many politicians in Ukraine, the big problem is that politicians in Ukraine should understand that the first they have to defend is foreign investors. Because locals will invest, they know how the system works. But if you want to attract foreign investment, you have to have a zero tolerance against attacks on these companies. If that was really implemented by this government or the next government, it would be fantastic because then people would, you know, if you stand in Denmark, there's 192 countries to invest in. So why Ukraine? And it's they have potential, but you also have risk. If you can reduce the risk, there will be much more investment, and that will make your country grow. And I think, realistically speaking, your country could easily have 7 to 8% gross GDP per year. And if you had that for a 10-year period, you would be double as rich as you are today, which would be a substantial change in the country. It would also be substantial for one of the figures you Ukrainians don't like, the oligarchs, because suddenly all their business would have double as rich customers. They would earn more, even if they had to be more honest. So it's the right path to do to start with foreign investments. And that's what I always tell.
And looking at the elections without commenting on the candidates, is it a source of anxiety that there will be potential instability, or is there confidence that life will move on in the right direction?
I think you are on the path. You are going the right way. I don't think it really matters, because your population is so strong that if somebody tries to sidetrack this, it will give a lot of noise. I think your country is on the... It's a little bit like starting a snowball. You started a snowball in 2014 and it's just getting bigger and bigger. And eventually that will change your country for sure. I have no doubt about that.
Okay, two final questions then. Short and longer term plans here and objectives of your company, BIR, Beer, Danish major company. And I'm talking to the chairman here, Thomas Sillesen.
We have three projects which I'm very much in focusing on. The first is, of course, we want to grow our current business, hiring more engineers. We have a very good teamwork with some universities now who educate students who will fit our business. The number two is we have this company called Technotool, which has factories in Malaysia and Denmark. We want to make a factory in Ukraine, and actually we want to close down our Malaysian factory, focusing on Ukraine. The final thing, which is the one I'm mostly focused on, is the fact I want to make a village for our staff. I believe that we have made probably the best office in Ukraine you can have for staff, but we also want that when they come home for work, they live a very nice place. And frankly speaking, you have a lot of not very good apartments, so our idea is to offer this to our staff. And I think it's an interesting project, because now we've been talking a lot about renewable, and it gives us a chance to show Ukraine how you make buildings in Danish building standards, and you know, with zero energy use and so on. So this is our main goals we have for the new year here.
Well, how generous and how progressive. A final question I always ask, last minute thoughts, wishes, a last minute thought to share with the audience about you in Ukraine, your company, your wishes for this country, your wishes for your business, or maybe just a word of advice to young businessmen that are listening to you.
I think the biggest problem I see in Ukraine is people do not believe in the country. I see that people are moaning despite the fact that the economy has gone forward for now nearly 3 years. I think your country is doing impressive steps forward, considering the conditions you are in, which is basically a small-scale war, and your biggest business friend has kind of stopped you. So I think that your country is doing much better than the people here really know. But Ukrainians are so used to moan and groan that they don't understand it. And this is what I find depressing, because otherwise I think Ukraine is just fantastic.
Well, thank you very much for those very encouraging words, inspiring words. I've been talking to Thomas Sillesen, the chairman of the Beer Group, dealing with alternative energy sources, engineering consulting, now in plastics and IT work here, and clearly somebody who can bring a lot to this country. Thank you, Thomas, for being here.
Thank you, Bogdan, for inviting me. Thank you.
Yura Samovilov released a new single with his new group Hurtom on his birthday last week. It's called Kratere, which means craters. He said that the best birthday gift for his special day was to share his new sound. So have a listen. Yeah. Next week, we'll be back with more commentary on events in Ukraine with interview host Bohdan Nahailo. We'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. So you can write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smerdychuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.